Welcome to Connection with Living Water International, a unique digital experience connecting you to the water crisis through real stories and real people. My name is Valentina Smith, Living Water's Marketing and Communications Coordinator, and I have the pleasure of hosting two wonderful servants of the Lord, our Regional Vice President for Latin America and the Caribbean, Wesley Charles, and our Director of Monitoring, Evaluation, and Learning, Alicia Elliott, for an exciting conversation on Living Water's journey of impact. This is the second episode of our three-part Serving Well series, so if you haven't listened to part one yet, we highly encourage you to check that out. Before we jump in, Wesley, Alicia, could you each please share a little bit more about who you are and what you do here at Living Water?
Thank you, Valentina. First of all, thank you very much for this invitation to share with my colleagues and the world, my colleagues from Latin America and the Caribbean, my colleagues from Asia, my colleagues from Africa, and my colleagues from US, wherever they are based. So it's a privilege. My name, as you said, is Wesley Charles, and I am from Haiti. That's where I was born. I was raised in Haiti and later on, so I started on my professional career, would take me to several places in the world as a part of my education background. So when I started first, my mom wanted me to be a medical doctor. So I went to medicine school for a couple of years, but after that, I felt that that was not really my passion, my call. So I left the medical field and I went to the social science. And I believe that, that's at this moment that God was preparing me to play a role in the development sector. And after that, I have the privilege to go back to school to get my master's degree in business administration. And today I serve at Living Water International as the VP for the Latin America and the Caribbean. Before that, I had the privilege to work for some other agencies, other organizations in the world. But I'm very pleased now to serve at Living Water, serving the thirsty. So thank you.
I am currently coming to you from Guatemala. So forgive any funny noises in the background or other things that might come about from this. And it's my very first podcast, so I'm a teensy bit nervous, but we'll get through that. I am Alicia Elliott, and I currently reside in the Houston, Texas area based in the Living Water Global Office in Stafford. And I'm pretty new to Living Water in the director of MEL position, Monitoring, Evaluation, and Learning. And I just got started this past September in 2023, so I'm really new. My background is in public health. And I got a PhD in epidemiology in May of last year, so about a year ago now. And I focused the breadth of my work on community health practice, water, sanitation, and hygiene, and how it impacts our physical, social, and mental well-being. While I definitely come from a strong academic research background, God had really captured my heart for service from a really young age. Like around 7 years old, I remember telling my parents that I wanted to be a missionary doctor when I grew up. So today I'm a different sort of doctor than I think I expected to be at that age. But I've been really fortunate to have been able to serve passionately at a couple of different small organizations in East Africa. I lived about a year each in Uganda and Kenya. And so now I'm here at Living Water, getting to direct the monitoring and evaluation of our programs and share about positive impacts that we've had in communities around the world.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that with our listeners. All right, let's begin. In part one, our COO, Jonathan Wiles, helped us answer the question, what does it mean to truly serve at Living Water? Today, I'd love for us to dive into Living Water's journey of service. Thanks to the Lord's guidance, Living Water's leadership, and programmatic strategy of WASH program areas, we've helped quench the thirst of over 7 million of our neighbors and worked in over 17 countries across the world. My question for the two of you then is, how did we get here? As a refresher for our listeners, Wesley, could you remind us of what a WASH program area or WPA is? How do they work?
That's a very interesting question, you know, because I was there when we start our first WPA or WASH program area. So let me start by saying that a WASH program area is not just a bunch of projects. A WASH program area, that's the program model of Living Water International. Before that, we didn't have a program model per se. Every organization has their own program model or a ministry, you know, model. Coming from World Vision International, I can tell you that they had a model called ADP, which stands for Area Development Program. But in the case of Living Water International, so we choose WPA, that stands for WASH Program Area. But it's not just an acronym, right? Because number one, you see that we use the concept of our program and not just, you know, project. So that's one key characteristic of what, you know, a WPA is. And secondly, as you can see, the focus is put more on area versus a program. I believe that the reason for that is because that was a big shift in the history of Living Water International. Before that, Living Water was like, you know, everywhere and every place and every country. So when we decide to implement this model, we said we are no longer to be everywhere and every place where we have, you know, program or ministry. Let's select a key area, a specific area. So the focus here, as you can say, it's on the geographical focus. The geographical area, that's where we are going to implement our program model. And what our program model is, at the beginning, it was a 3 or 5 years plan, but later on, we'll discover that, you know, it can go up to 6 years or 7 years for many reasons. And the piece that is very important for people to understand is we don't just do WASH. We need to ensure that the WASH intervention, you know, comply with some key principles. So that's why the best way to define a WPA is to say it's a defined geographical area as the focus of our intervention, where we integrate all the principles of for water access, for sanitation, for hygiene, church mobilization, gospel proclamation, and sustainability. It's very important for people to understand that you can have all those five components, but if you don't comply with the principles of each of those sectors, so that's all the WPA. Let me give you some example. When we talk about, you know, a WASH program area, we talk about water access. One principle we have in water access is to target a standard level of service, meaning that it can go from basic service, from intermediate level of service, or from high level of service. The basic is like, you know, 20 liters of water per person per day. So that's we call the basic. And we have to address the issue of the quantity, the quality, the reliability, and the accessibility. So that's just, you know, for the water access. If you go to the principle of our sanitation, one principle that we have is the demand driving. So we should ensure that in the WPA, so we do activities that will enhance, that will create, you know, the demand for the sanitation service. Otherwise, we are not doing your WPA. Talking about hygiene, it should target, you know, trigger a specific behavior change. So that's one principle, you know, for hygiene. And so that is to say that all those five components I just share with you, there are some principles beyond those components. So the WPA is not just a cluster of projects, it's a program model, and it complies some key principles.
That is so good. Thank you, Wesley. I think the tendency is definitely to just think, oh, it must simply be a cluster of projects. And it's so much more than that. So
That's
thank you
correct.
for clarifying that. I heard you mention that we haven't always worked within WPA. So would you take us back in time and share what working at Living Water used to be like before we implemented this WPA approach? How did we serve the thirsty back then?
I was a privilege to join Living Water before they start the WPA approach. That was in 2011. And from 2011 today, which is 2024, 13 years, what I can tell you, we have been always serving the thirsty with clean water and living water. The way that we used to do that was very simple. We'll go to any place that we are called to serve and we'll do the water system. And most of the case, it was a borehole, what we call the water well. And then as we do this water well, we drill this water well, We'll do some hygiene lessons during the week, and then in the night, so that's during the day, we'll do the hygiene lesson, and during the night, we'll do some evangelistic activities. It can be campaign, revival, you know, and so on and so on. And we used to call that intervention a water projects, you know, a water system. And then this kind of intervention usually was done and everywhere that we have been called to serve, to respond to a need. And more usually what will happen, we will select place or will be called in place where people don't have water at all. And that's why before 2011, so we used to be called the first time water access organization, because we will target very small communities of just 50 families or 75 families, maximum, you know, 100 families, and we will provide water to those people. First time no water access. So that's the kind of intervention that we used to have. It was basically, you know, what we call water projects. But in 2011, when we released what we call the quality standard or the minimum standards, before that, it was a minimum standard. Later on, we'll call it, you know, that's where we say that for any projects to be considered as living water projects, it has to comply with some components, you know. And that's where we start to elevate the aspect of our sanitation and hygiene. So it was at that moment we start to talk about the WASH projects. But before that, it was just, you know, water projects, and then we moved to WASH projects. So before the WPA model, we used to serve the thirsty, but through very simple projects everywhere in the world, like in Haiti. Haiti is made of 10 geographical departments. You will find the footprint of living water there in 8 geographical departments. So that just gives you an idea of how, you know, scattered that we used to be under this concept of, you know, WASH projects.
What a shift. What a shift, but how beautiful to see how, even though this strategy has been such a blessing and has allowed us to do so much, and we'll get into that later in our conversation, just seeing the Lord's presence and his favor and his guidance throughout everything that Living Water has done since its conception. I'd love for you to expand on what that process looked like of implementing this shift. Like, let us into how this unfolded in real time. Was there a specific conversation or a catalyst, an aha moment, so to speak?
Remember that I told you that I came to Living Water in 2011. 1 year before I came on board, Living Water had a year-round process of discernment, reflection, consultations. They call that, you know, watershed. That was a strategic planning process, a very broad strategic planning process. And they call it, you know, watershed, cultivating our strength for growth and impact. And I think this word of impact was the one really that triggered that idea to have, you know, to move from WASH projects, you know, to WASH program. Because as I said, living water has been always, you know, about, you know, clean water and living water. And as we look at the impact now, we said that we cannot just provide water just, you know, for consumption. So the water should have a higher impact on the life of the people and the life of the community. So we start now to talk about, you know, outcome and not just, you know, out. When we're doing, you know, water projects, so what we'll measure, track, and report on is number of people now who have, you know, clean water. Number of people who have received the gospel. So that's the kind of things that we use to track our WASH projects. So when this strategy call for impact, we need to have a higher result, deeper impact, you know, and the life of the people and the life of the community. So it was under this new strategy, or the very first strategy that we have, you know, the watershed one, that we decide, you know, to make that shift. So the water will be seen not just something just for consumption, but it will be something that will contribute to the health of the people, the health of the family, the health of the household. It's something that will contribute to improve the education, because once, you know, kids now, they are in better health, they can learn, you know, better, right? And that will contribute also to livelihood, because if you have more people who are healthy, those people can produce more in their communities. So since we are talking about impact, we felt the need, okay, if we have to have more impact in the life of the people and the life of the communities, we have to update, to revise the way that we deliver our ministry. And that's why we make that shift, you know, from a project to program, from WASH projects now to WASH program. So that was the catalyst the very first strategic plan that we have in 2011. And as I said before, it was a result of a one-year process of a discernment, reflection, and consultation with people, including the people that we serve in every single country.
Amazing. I love that. Instead of just simply labeling it a strategy, you very explicitly highlight this is a process of discernment. I think that says a lot about why this organization has been able to impact as many people as it has been able to impact. Again, because even though we have incredible leadership, and we do, we know that we're following the master strategist first and foremost. I would love for you to share a story from this time, because a little birdie told me you had a hand in implementing our first WPAs. So could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, that was a privilege for me to be part of a group of staff, colleagues that test this idea, this concept. Because really, in 2011, when we talk about the WPA, it was just, you know, a concept. But now we have to learn that concept, to translate that concept into the reality. So when I joined Living Order in 2011, we started to organize the team, to organize the office that we have. So Haiti office was the first one that was ready in Latin America and the Caribbean to have the very first WPA in LAC. At that time in Africa, so Uganda was ready, you know, to start, you know, the WPA 1 year before that. So Haiti was in 2013 and Uganda was in 2012. So before I talk about the programming side, how that happened, I should tell you that the WPA model affects, you know, the whole organization. It's not just, you know, the program team. It was not just something for programming. We had to revise the structure we had, because the structure that we had was just, you know, for projects. And now we are talking about program. We are talking about impact. We are talking about, you know, output. I believe that that's where we came up with this technical team called Program Excellence, right? And then at the field level now, we have to look at people with different skills, with different competencies. Because now, I think that at that time, there was a clear decision from Living Order to move, you know, from a missionary organization to be a missionary and professional organization, which is a big shift, right? Even in terms of our systems, so we have to revise our systems, because the system that we had even for reporting was just about projects. So now we need to have a system that will track program. Even in the fundraising side, our colleagues are from the engagement team. So they have now, you know, to learn how to prepackage the offer to the donors. So it was a lot of change, you know, going on. At the field level on the program side, really, it was a very long but interesting process, because the first thing we had to do was to select a country, which one is the best one to try this new idea. At that time, I believe that in LAC, we had 9 countries where we had ministry. In Africa, there were, like, you know, 12 or 14 countries. So we have to select one to try that idea. Africa picked Uganda, and then LAC, so we picked, you know, Haiti to do that. So that was the first step, select a country. The second step now, you have to select one department, you know, to do that, right? So it was not an easy decision, because you had to let go of some other department. And after we do that, we start the process of planning the WASH program area. And the program area was launched in Haiti at the end of 2013. And after 2 years now, we have a kind of a midterm review. So we just, you know, made a pause and to reflect on the learnings. Based on that, we adjust the second phase, you know, of the WPA. And thanks to the learning that we have learned, you know, from Haiti program, we can, and from Uganda also, even that it was at distance, we were able in 2015 to launch the third WPA. It was in Nicaragua. And that's where, you know, since that, we start to scale up. And today, I'm very pleased to say that most of the country office that we have in the world, they have a WPA. And I believe that that's a big achievement. And that's glory to the Lord. And big thanks to our donors make that sacrifice, you know, to invest so much in our program model.
That's amazing. When you think of what that was like, there's a lot of emotions at play there, right? That the hope, yeah, but also the some tough choices had to be made. Yeah. So it makes sense as to why a process of discernment was needed. Yeah. But is there a moment, and I know I'm asking you to just go back in time right now, but was there a moment where you thought, man, this is incredible, I'm so glad I'm part of this?
I mean, there are so many moments. One of the moments, just looking, for instance, at the midterm review of the first WBA that we had, that was in Haiti and LAC. I was part of a graduation ceremony. There were several colleagues from the global office who were there with us at that ceremony. We had a group of women who have been trained on behavior change. And those women, you know, they have completed all the lessons and now they became agents, you know, training agents of in their own communities. And I was there, you know, on that celebration. There were like more than 100 young women, well-dressed, so excited to share about the learnings, what they are doing. And you can see that when we started WPA, it was just, you know, the small team of living water, just maybe 12 or 14 people promoting hygiene, behavior change in the community. And now to see that you have 100 people volunteer and they are all from the community committed, you know, to do that. Oh my goodness, that was phenomenal. And when we had now the final result of the WPA, we are not just looking at how many people that we serve with water, but we can see how the disease that was related to water has dropped, you know, the number of cases in that community. And you heard the testimonies of our kids who tell you that in the previous years, I used to miss, you know, 10 days of school because of water issue. I used to lose 15 days of my school because of that. And now the testimony of those kids, that was, you know, very encouraging. And there was even one case that still have in my mind. It was just a simple water committee because as part of that process, we organize people to manage the water system. And people will contribute a kind of petty cash, so where they put money, and that money will serve to maintain the water system. And I was surprised, you know, to see in one of those areas, in one of those communities, the water committee transformed this small initiative and a small credit program. So where they provide a loan to other women in that community, just, you know, from their own cash. It's something that we did not even expect to happen. It was not part of the program. So people just use that as a leverage, as an example, you know, as a catalyst, you know, to do more things to serve the communities. So that's why really when you talk about the WPA, I believe that we can just attract one piece of what's going on, because what's going on is bigger than what, you know, we can see.
Mm-hmm. Amen. I have to say, I mean, first off, that's incredible. Wow. But also from an MNC perspective, marketing and communications perspective, I think of our approach to storytelling. And when we get to share these stories from what's happening in our communities, there's this focus to always highlight the fact that Living Water steps in as a guide, right? But the hero, the actual hero here is the community member, because like you just said, there are things that happen that are not even part of the program. And yes, the program contributed to making that happen, but it's just amazing to see what happens when we empower people. Thank you for opening that window to the past. Again, just seeing how the Lord really does guide our steps as we earnestly seek him as individuals and as an organization is so awe-worthy. But all right, it's 2024. Over a decade has passed, right? So why do we continue working in WPAs? Has there ever been a moment of like,
Not at all.
Good answer.
We believe that we are called to serve, and more specifically to promote transformation. Even that in the early documents of Living Water, you will see that we always talk about transformation. At the beginning, it was just, you know, spiritual transformation. And then later on, we start to expand that concept of a transformation now to include physical and social, you know, transformation. We just call it, you know, integral, you know, transformation. If you go to our theory of change, you will see that we talk about flourishing. And again, we talk about spiritual flourishing, social flourishing, and material, you know, flourishing. So that's what we believe that we are called to do. That's a long-term result, right? It's not something that you can do in just 1 month or 6 weeks or 10 weeks. Is a long-term result. So you need to invest more, you know, take time to make that happen. That's require, you know, some partnership at different, you know, level. Partnership at the country level, at the region level, partnership at the community level, collaboration with other peers, organization. That involves also some kind of a local appropriation, because transformation will not happen unless that is accepted, you know, by the people. And as you just said, that, you know, who are the heroes? We are just the facilitators. The heroes, they are the community's members, the community's leaders. So until that they see the need for that change to happen, it will not happen, right? So that's local appropriations. This kind of transformation that we are looking for require, you know, some change of a value, some change of attitude, some change of a behavior. So all those things, you know, to happen, which has the implication of the spiritual or social or material transformation that we are looking for, so far, the WPA is the right, you know, model that we have to make that change happen. Of course, during the past 10 years, we have learned, you know, so much from the WPA that I can say that even that we still use that concept, or the concept at some extent has evolved. 2012, as I said, we just had, you know, the concept per se. It took us about 2 years to solidify, you know, what we mean, that concept, meaning by that, you know, what we mean in concrete terms, you know, by WPA. That's exactly what we did in Uganda. That's exactly what we did in Haiti with the first WPA that we had in Haiti. So it was only in 2015 that the model, you know, really is clear, you know, for everyone. But as we go, we discover that, you know, when we talk about, you know, WASH today, we need to diversify the offer. So the water access is no longer just a borehole well. We are talking about all kind of a water solution that can be a distribution system. It can be something by gravity. It can be anything which correspond, you know, to the context of the community that we serve. Talking about hygiene today, it's no longer just one methodology like, you know, care group that we used to do in the past. Today, we use, you know, FAS, we use CLTS, so it depends on the context, right? Even the church mobilization, probably you heard that, you know, today, living water is about to flourish. But before that, it was just CMGP that stands for Church Mobilization and Gospel Proclamation. But today, the focus is more on empowering the local church so they can serve the communities, even to preach the gospel. It's no longer our staff now who has the responsibility to share the gospel, to build the gospel and at the front line. We still do that in the backseat, supporting the local church to do that. And as we have learned today, we talk more about holistic WASH program and not just, you know, WASH program. So the concept has evolved a little bit, but the model, you know, per se, the principle are still the same.
That is excellent. Thank you for expanding on the evolution of this approach and how we've learned and adjusted continuously through all the changes that have taken place, which is so exciting. And I have to highlight for our listeners, we actually have a lot of different connection features on several things Wesley just touched on. For example, our April connection this year was an incredible video from Living Water Mexico about piped water systems. So I encourage you to check out our connection library after this episode to learn more about our work. But another element of the evolving way in which we serve the overlooked and excluded is how it's been sustained by our commitment to good stewardship through measuring and analyzing our impact, and by the ongoing learnings on how we can serve people well throughout each season of Living Water's history. So, Alicia, could you please explain how we track the impact that we're making within our WPAs? How does Living Water approach monitoring, evaluation, and learning?
First off, I just want to say, as a newcomer to Living Water, getting to listen to Wesley tell the story of where we come from was really, really cool. I'm blown away by it. And to know how far we've come as an organization and to be a part of that really important piece, which is expanding our monitoring, evaluation, and learning as an organization. So Wesley had mentioned some important technical words like output and outcome and impact, which are really important concepts for monitoring and evaluation. So maybe it's a good start to explain what exactly is monitoring, evaluation, and learning. So across different organizations, you'll kind of hear it in different sort of ways. Like for us, it's MEL, monitoring, evaluation, and learning. But in other organizations, you can hear it as MEAL, M-E-A-L, which is monitoring, evaluation, accountability, and learning, or MERL, where the R stands for either research or reporting. So the field is, what's it called, like an alphabet soup of acronyms. But at its core, we're concerned with with the same things, which is primarily to answer the questions, where are we starting from? Where do we want to go? That is, what is our goal? And how do we know when we've achieved this goal? And then when we do get there, how do we know we've done it well, with excellence, with quality, and in line with God's calling for our organization? And finally, on top of all that, how do we continue to seek God's direction for us through learning from our experience along the way? So in more technical terms, monitoring, evaluation, and learning are three distinct but interrelated ideas. Monitoring is the continual and systematic collection of data that provides information about how we're progressing in a project toward its goal, while evaluation assesses the program as a whole, from its design, how we implemented, its results and outcomes, particularly kind of looking from the beginning to the end of that program. So it's kind of this big overall shot. So we ask different questions and in a different way. So monitoring is asking, you know, how many people have we served or brought clean drinking water up to that certain point, where the evaluation will ask, did the project reach the intended number of people it wanted to and reach those with the greatest need? Because we have a very heavy emphasis on wanting to reach the overlooked and excluded, the vulnerable people and populations. And why or why not did we reach those goals? And then that why or why not question becomes really, really important for our learning. And then we cycle that information back into how do we do our work in the future better? How can we reach the vulnerable and excluded better the next time around? And all of those learnings get spread across the organization, within country, within region, across the globe, so that we can achieve our goals better and reach the people that we intend to.
I would love for you to expand on the challenges inherent in measuring the impact of water access, sanitation, hygiene, and the gospel. If everything begins with water, where does living water's impact begin and where does it end?
That's a really good question. And I wish I could say it was easy to answer. But you could say the way we think about it is we have this concept called indicators. And when Wesley talked about outputs, outcomes, and impact, we know more about these things through specific indicators. But indicators are imperfect measurements of the reality of what's going on. There are best ways of parceling out small segments of a very complicated and multi-sectoral situation that's going on within a community to just kind of see little pinpoints of what's coming from the work that we're doing. So we look at these indicators, they fall into like five categories, and that's our inputs, our activities, and then, as Wesley mentioned, outputs, outcomes, and impact. And inputs and activities are the things that we as living water are putting into the environment, the things we are working into our WPA. So that's, you know, the resources, the finances, the people that we have on the ground, our field staff in the country offices that are out there in the communities working every single day. So that's our inputs. And then the activities are all of the different things that, you know, we're doing with those resources. And so we're doing, you know, hygiene and sanitation classes and training churches on the Flourish model. And so there's a number of Bible story workshops that we'll collect, or the activity itself of drilling the wells and the construction of latrines. Those are all the different activities that we're putting in. And so the outputs then are the direct results of those activities. So it would be the number of drilled boreholes that have been completed within the community, or the creation of the water management committees that then oversee those boreholes. It's also the number of people who are presented with the gospel through the various different activities that we're doing along the way. And then you go into the outcomes, which are kind of the more short and medium term changes that are happening within the community. And so impacts are the more long-term changes. So outcomes are kind of shorter, medium-term. Impacts are those long-term changes. And so outcomes can include something like the percentage of households and communities with at least basic access to water, sanitation, and hygiene. So during an evaluation, we'll have a baseline, and that baseline will tell us what percentage of households in that community currently have basic access to water, sanitation, and hygiene. And then at the end, for our end line evaluation of that program, we would hope to see the outcome of an increase in households that have basic access to water, sanitation, and hygiene. And that can even go into, knowledge. We want to see the increase in people with knowledge about proper hand washing or how to prevent diarrhea. And then, the number of people that feel confident to go share the gospel through the Bible story workshops and other activities that they've been involved in. And so then that leads to some of the longer term outcomes we're hoping to see from this work, which is the impacts. And so that's more like the reduction in cases of diarrhea in children as they live in a healthier environment from clean water and improved sanitation. Or something like increase in primary school or a high school student enrollment because that school now has access to water, or latrines that give girls privacy that they need to handle menstrual hygiene while at school. So now you have increased school enrollment, a healthier and more flourishing environment overall, and holistic flourishing is what goes at the top of our theory of change. And holistic flourishing is a very ambitious word, but all of the things that we deal with water end up affecting those different areas of holistic flourishing. So we have this concept called attribution versus contribution. And attribution is the concept where, we can say we caused this to happen, where contribution is a broader concept where we recognize there are many different factors happening within the community that can impact what's happening, what's going on, what's the result that's come out of a certain activity or, the programs that we put into play. And so when we're looking at it from that frame of mind, we are contributing to some of the impact and the longer term outcomes that are happening within the community. For example, I talked about school enrollment and girls having the privacy they need to handle menstrual hygiene while at school. That is going to increase school enrollment, decrease being absent from school, which will increase, hopefully, their grades. And the school becomes a place where people want to bring their children. Now, school enrollment itself is not just related to water, sanitation, and hygiene, right? There are many different factors at play within a community and within a family about whether they can send their child to school. There's finances and other things that go on in their daily lives. So we look at our contribution to school enrollment, as an example, as that a contribution. We haven't necessarily caused specifically all by ourselves the increase in school enrollment at that school or the improvement of grades of the children that go there. But we can certainly say that we've contributed to that happening.
Thank you so much for letting us into the world of Mel, Alicia. I love hearing how intentional we are about differentiating between what we attribute to communities through the services that our amazing regional staff provides and that our incredible donors enable, but also what we're contributing to, the work that's already happening. As Jonathan mentioned in part one, the church and God Himself is already at work in this community in one way or another. There are other organizations in the WASH sector that we partner with that may already be at work in our community. And most importantly, the community members themselves are already determined to overcome the situation that they're facing, and they are the ones that take what we've provided them with, that safe water, that sanitation and hygiene knowledge, that encounter with the Lord, and they're the ones that use that to change their lives and their story. Speaking of stories, this is connection, so I have to ask, are there any specific stories that come to mind that you feel could illustrate this for our listeners?
Yeah, so one of my first trips that I got to do when I came to Living Water, I ended up traveling quite a bit in the communities. I got to go to Honduras, and there is a community called Plan del Cajote. And that's as good as I can get with my Spanish pronunciation. But they live up in the mountains. How anybody ever got up to those mountains to begin with, I don't know. But I was just so amazed with the community, what they had built up there. And to try to just get up there requires four-wheel drive. And even that, you're not really sure if that's going to be enough. But Living Water had somehow managed to drill a well for that community. And it was a hand pump well. But the next step was to actually start working to upgrade the system to be, you know, piped to the houses around the community. And where the water well was sitting, which is where it had to sit based on geology and where the water source was, you know, everybody had to go down the hill a little bit to get to the water source, and then they have to hike it back up the hill to get to their houses. So trying to figure out a way to get the piped water to their house. But in order to do that requires pumping it up to a giant tank so that you can have gravity filter down to the houses. What has to happen within this community, and this is why this stuck out to me so much, because I learned about how important it was to empower the community to take control of their situation. The community had to work very closely with the local government to get electricity brought up to their community. And this is something that had already been in process with the local government, but it was taking a long time. And so our Honduran staff, they were there mentoring the community, encouraging them to continue to reach out to their local government to advocate for themselves to get electricity brought to the community so that they can have the system put in that ends up with gravity filtered pipes to their homes. And what was really neat is that, you know, the leaders that we were working with in the community included pastors. And so now you have leaders within the community and the churches all coming together to advocate for themselves and the other things that the community needs, electricity, in order to really achieve the, as we keep saying, the holistic flourishing of that area. And so that is probably one of the first really instrumental stories that I see. Plus, they have a really delicious local dessert that they like to give. They grow pumpkins up there. They cook the pumpkins, chop it up, put it in milk, and put a lot of sugar in it. And it's really delicious. So if ever you happen to be in Plan del Cajote in Honduras, I definitely recommend you try their local dessert.
Well, that sounds delicious. So maybe after this, you know, Wesley's in Florida, you're already in Guatemala, and I'm in Houston, so none of us are that far. We can hop on a plane, meet up in Honduras, and have a little dessert. In the meantime, I want to highlight how your story touched on the fact that our drillers work in incredibly challenging terrains to hit safe water. And I just think that deserves a whole podcast episode on its own. But I didn't want to move on to the next question without making that point. Honestly, it's incredible the work that our field staff do day in and day out. So if any of you are listening to this, we are so grateful for you and all that you do. In part one, which if you haven't listened to yet, please do, Jonathan Wiles, our COO, highlighted our overflow strategy and specifically guiding position number two, which is to implement holistic wash programs for all. So today, to wrap up our conversation, Alicia, could you give us a little teaser of the work that's been done throughout Overflow, specifically as it relates to monitoring and communicating the impact of our WPAs?
Oh, sure. The WPAs introduced in the most beautiful way possible a level of growing complexity to our work in the communities we serve. So understanding what exactly our impact is, it requires a methodology for communicating. Probably easiest to think about it is like an annual estimation of that impact through the WPAs. And so we needed to better understand that full scope of the work that we're doing. So I guess I say tune in next time to hear the thrilling story of the People Served Working Group, which brought together people across the organization. They dove into a design sprint to explore exciting new methodologies. They did focus group discussions and interviews with people within the organization and even outside the organization to understand, you know, what are the possibilities that could be done. So tune in next time.
That was a great teaser. Thanks, Alicia. And yes, tune into part 3, which will be coming soon. We're going to be discussing what this new way of communicating our impact is and what it means for you, our staff and supporters. I know that it can seem like a bit of an intimidating or complex topic, but we promise, just like every other thing that we have broken down, laughed through, and been inspired by throughout this series, part 3 will be no exception. So, to our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in to our Serving Well series. And Alicia, Wesley, this has been an incredible conversation. Thank you both for your time, for sharing your knowledge, experiences, and insights with us. And most of all, for letting the Lord use you to serve others well. Wesley, could you please close us out in prayer?
I will do that. Con gusto, I will say, you know, in Spanish. Dear Lord, we are coming to you because we felt so fortunate that we can speak about what you called, we can speak about your ministry. As we were sharing with our colleagues in the world, we felt again your spirit moving through that organization. We felt your hands over every single staff that we have. We felt your spirit moving in the hearts of the people who contribute. So today, Living Water can be still a vehicle serving the thirsty and the whole. Or faithful that you are. So we ask you that you give us to be grateful to you, to be always remembering that you are the one who is the leading of that organization, and that you are the only Lord that we are serving, and that our role is just, you know, to obey you, to follow your guidance, to follow your word, and to be your feet and your hands wherever we are serving. Help the people who are listening to better understand so what you want them to achieve in their life, as your children, as your servants, and keep blessing each of us. In the name of Jesus, amen.